Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, your chair of the Grown-Ups Forum, and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. Marcy Albaher is a leading authority on the changing face of work, and a vice president at Encore.org, a nonprofit making it easier for millions of people to pursue second acts for the greater good. Her new book, The Encore Career Handbook, How to Make a Living and a Difference in the Second Half of Life, was published by Workman Publishing in January of 2013. A former blogger and columnist for the New York Times, she's the author of One Person, Multiple Careers, the original guide to the slash career. Marcy has appeared on or been quoted by countless media outlets, including NBC's Today, Nightly News, The Wall Street Journal, the National Public Radio outlet. Marcy is on the advisory boards of the Op-Ed Project, which focuses on increasing the number of women and minority voices in public conversations, and SheWrites.com, an online community for women writers. She holds a bachelor's degree in English from the University of Pennsylvania, a law degree from the Washington College of Law at American University. She lives in New York City. These are some points that I would make about Marcy. Her new book is The Encore Career Handbook, which we're going to talk about tonight, and which is on sale after the program. And if we run out of copies, we're taking a list, and there are book plates for her to sign, so the book can be sent to you with a signature in it. She's vice president of Encore.org, a nonprofit making it easier for millions of people to pursue second acts for the greater good. And she is herself a serial career changer. First, a corporate lawyer. Second, journalist, author, speaker, educator, and nonprofit staffer, author, and speaker. And in conversation with Marcy tonight, we are honored to have Isabel Duran, who will be in a question and answer mode with Marcy. And I'd like to introduce Isabel. Isabel Duran, founder and CEO of Latinas Contra Cancer, based in Silicon Valley, California, has over a decade of nonprofit experience. She's an award-winning journalist, a 42-year veteran of television news. San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee proclaimed April 11, 2013, Isabel Duran Day, following her recent retirement. She's featured in a 2008 publication, Building the Latino Future, Success Stories for the Next Generation, by authors Frank Carbajal and Humberto Madrid. She was appointed in 2011 to the congressionally mandated IBCERCC, Interagency Breast Cancer and Environmental Research Convening Committee, investigating the state of the science on breast cancer and the environment. The 270-page report was released in February 2013. Duran is a cancer survivor and serves on the boards of the California Breast Cancer Research Program Council and Patient Advocacy Leadership Committee at GSK. Latinas Contra Cancer, a leading advocacy and service agency, has four cornerstones: prevention, detection and treatment, patient services, and research. LCC also convenes the biennial National Latino Cancer Summit, and in 2009, LCC received the Health Agency Award from the Latino Caucus of the American Public Health Association. So we want to welcome our speaker, our conversationalist, and I'll turn the program now over to Isabel Duran.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's a great time to be here with all of you. I don't know if you all are struggling with the word retirement. I think it needs to be retired, that word. I came in the door, Marcy, and someone said, "Congratulations on your retirement." And I said, "Why do people congratulate you on stepping down? You know, it just feels very strange." And perhaps that's what everybody is doing and talking about at this stage of their lives, kind of a transitioning. But what does that look like? So where does Encore, your Encore career, fit in that transitioning?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm just gonna interject for one moment to say that I'm thrilled that your quote unquote retirement has given us an excuse to have this conversation, because I'm pretty honored that we're getting to be in conversation together, and you're gonna hear as this goes along just why Isabel is the perfect interviewer for this. That's gonna come out shortly. But the whole retirement thing really is at the core of what Encore is about. It used to be that the trajectory of work was that you worked for 30 years, and then you moved into retirement, which could last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and that was it, you know. Move off to Leisure Village, have some permanent, you know, golf or shuffleboard, and, you know, spend time with the grandkids, and that was it. And what Encore is all about is that paradigm has broken. That's kind of yesterday's story. We all know that retirement as a model doesn't really work anymore. People aren't interested in it. People can't afford it. It just doesn't make sense, and we're living long enough that that period of leisure could last 20 or 30 years. It could last as long as that primary career that many people have had. So the notion doesn't work anymore, and it is being retired. But where Encore comes on the scene is what's going to replace retirement. So we are an organization that's really tracking a growing trend that has a lot of traction right now, particularly in the Bay Area where we're from, because there's a growing cohort of people, like Isabel, who are deciding to do something to change the world for the better instead of retirement. So they're not receding at all from the kind of the public stage and from the world of work, but rather they are retooling and reinventing in new ways that have some social impact.
You know, it was interesting, Marcy, because I got up this morning and looked at my local paper, and there on the very front page were three different stories that fit this conversation. The first one is that our basketball wonderkind Jason Kidd is retiring at the age of 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that 72-year-old controller Bill Lockyer is retiring after 46 years and says he's looking for a new challenge.
Yeah.
And then there's the story of physicist Dick Post. He's 94 years old, and though he retired, he still works 4 days a week out there at Livermore Lab.
Love it.
So these are all so fascinating in the context of how they live their lives and how they don't see them as stopping, or they stop and they start, right, or there's the continuation, which is why I think that what I did was kind of interesting. I think you call it slash careers.
Yes. Okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your own story? Because Isabel was honored last year by Encore.org as a Purpose Prize Fellow for this incredible work that she did in what I would call a slash career, meaning so she had a full-time job as a television newscaster, and on the side, while recovering from her own breast cancer, started and led an organization, and for the past 14 years, Isabel has been doing both of these things in tandem, and only in your retirement have you moved to your Latinas Contra Cancer work full-time.
Well, so basically, forget full-time, 24/7.
Right.
So
right,
that means
right,
everything, right?
Right. Right.
What's this full-time? You
know? Right, so before you were doing it all 48/14,
right,
is that the idea?
You
okay.
know, John talks about folks not having technology, and aren't they great? But I, these days, can't live without technology because I have to operate in this kind of a world. And I think that if you want to succeed in your next transition, I think Jane Fonda in her book called it the third act,
yeah.
which I kind of think is cool. So I think that if you want to succeed there, You have to be in touch with what is out in the world, which is why journalism, as you know, is so great, because it keeps you informed and intact.
Right. Right.
But I transitioned serendipitously, because, in fact, I got a cancer diagnosis. And I was, 51 years old, and suddenly television wasn't even looking that good anymore. It was in transition. I was at the nadir of my career, and it was, as a journalism medium, I thought not going in the right direction. So when I was diagnosed, it sort of was like a stop the clock. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, it's this business that's killing me. This is what gave me this cancer, you know, set off this time bomb. So I said, so if you go back, you deserve to die, because you're making that decision to go back to something that's toxic. But one has to eat, right? One has to continue to pay the bills, right? As a single older woman, I needed to do that. So I said, okay, I'll do part-time. But in the meantime, I'd become a cancer poster child because I had done a three-part series on my cancer. And so someone asked me to engage with a group of Latinas who were serving low-income Spanish-speaking women with breast cancer and suggest to them what they could do next. So I did that. I spent a couple of months with them, and I said, the work you're doing is great. In order to do more of it, you need money. In order to get money, you need to become a 501c3. So they thought about that for a little bit, and I walked out of the room, and they elected me president. So lo and behold, began my encore career, forced to put my money where my mouth is. And the most interesting thing, Marcy, and I think that you documented this over and over, is that this created a whole new opportunity for me to grow in different ways that I had never thought possible.
Mm-hmm.
Be very much a startup, entrepreneurial, you know, doing business, which never had taken a business class in my life.
And let me just interrupt. And
please do.
Because it's still going on with all kinds of new ways. Two things that happened when Isabella and I were trying to prepare for this. She agreed by email, and then it took us weeks and weeks and weeks to find 1 hour that we could talk to on the phone, because Isabella's traveling all over the country, giving speeches everywhere. I'm in the midst of a book tour. We're trying to make this happen. And then we finally caught up for a call. I don't know, it was 8 a.m. or something. And when I talked to her, she said, I just finished completing a test, because Isabel is now studying for this new certification you needed in order to do something for the organization. Oh, that had to do with
research.
Right, right, to be a grantee for research.
Well, no, to actually participate with human subjects in research.
So, but you said you were studying harder than you had studied to get a PhD.
Well, you know, when you have chemo brain, everything seems like you'll have to study just a little harder, you know, when you have those little memory lapses. So, yes, so when you run a nonprofit and you engage in research, you have to have all of these certifications and so on and so forth. And because I'm trying to develop best practices and be a model program, particularly for the Latino community, I do require that we do these things.
Right.
But, you know, that's the learning.
But that's the learning. For this conversation, I'm more interested in what you had to do to transform even than your organization. And, you know, you get any encore person in a conversation, though, and all they want to do is talk to you about their cause. So you have to get used to that, because, you know, I'm giving her a microphone, so we're going to hear a lot about Latinas contra cancer, which we should. But for tonight, I think people want to hear more about what those challenges felt like for you, because, you know, you were, and some of the struggles even of staying on the job. One of the things that I was most interested when we prepared for this conversation is that you talked about after your cancer, there were some parts of your day-to-day job that were becoming really difficult for you to do. You said you felt fuzzy on the air after having your chemo. I mean, that is something, it's a reality of what this life stage can be, that there are times where even continuing in the work at this crazy pace where I used to, your body may not let you all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a result of the toxic cocktails that I had to take, obviously. And so I had a little bit of memory lapses, and I would be sitting on the air trying to do an interview, and I would be sitting there saying, I know there's something brilliant back here, but it's not coming out here. And so I'd be sitting there, and my co-anchor would look at me, and my other colleague would look at me, and you know, kind of, and it must have, maybe it was 10 seconds, but it felt more like 10 minutes. But in those initial times when this happened, there was a great deal of fear. But because I was so startled by it, and I said, because I've got this audience out there, and they all must be waiting, what's next? But I did it. found substitute words for what I was trying to say and kept going. And ultimately what I decided was, well, risk is what you do. Mm-hmm. And so you've just done it again. You've taken that risk. You're going to get through this. It might, could, or should change over time. And what I also came to understand was you have a very forgiving audience.
Right, right.
And besides which, you know, there's that Schadenfreude kind of thing. It's better you than me
kind of
thing. So they're saying, well, she's up there. Good. Let her do the work. And I'll sit here and watch.
But that also gives you something to talk about as a cancer advocate, that there are these ways you're trying to still work while dealing with your disease and being a role model for others. So I think that humanizes you for the work that you're trying to do. And the fact that you're not covering it up, you know, that you can talk about that.
I think now knowledge is powerful.
Right,
I did a three-part series on my journey because this was the most opportune time for me to get up close and personal with a disease that so many people still feared in 1999. And giving them that opportunity to see it, I thought was really important and crucial. But bottom line is, what it says to me is that I'm willing to put myself out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding here, Marcy, trying to find a way that we can get back to Encore.
Okay, go. Okay, back to Encore.
Because
okay.
I know that it's personal experiences, obviously, that make you who you are and perhaps prepare you for those next challenges that you need. And those are things that you have in the book, all of those things. But you know what? Me being who I am, I always do a PowerPoint.
Go for it.
So here it is, folks, your PowerPoint. But the point was I was hoping that we were going to capture some of these things as we went, what Encore work looks like.
Yep.
So Jane Pauley says we're trying to create a small army for change. Is it for me? 5 questions to ask yourself. It's in the book. It's in the Bible. Plan the transition. Psychic rewards rather than financial rewards. And yet, there are opportunities to have financial rewards. Then setting those priorities, and then the income issue, you know, is it for yourself or for others in terms of the income? So there's a ton here. See, here's that scary thing. You know, what did I get myself into? But anyway, so go ahead, Marcy.
Okay, sure.
I'm lobbing the ball to you.
Okay, I think we can start a little bit at the beginning, and I'm going to put someone else in the limelight for a second who's sitting in the front row here, because she's in the book, and she's a person who is going to be willing to talk later if anybody wants to talk to her. Karen Hazelcorn is somebody I met who... I met her randomly at a trade show a couple of years ago when Karen was at really what I think is the fundamental first step of any Encore, is this exploring and trying things out stage. I mean, you kind of leapt into something, and that's one way. And the other way in that many people do if they have some time in advance of their Encore is they try a bunch of things out, and they test things they're interested in various ways. And Karen had a long corporate career, global experience around the world, and suddenly hit a time in her life where she got really interested in the idea of working with textiles from all kinds of countries around the world and helping mostly women who are making crafts in all kinds of country bring their crafts to market. Is that a pretty accurate description of what you want to do? In kind of a fair trade way. I happened to meet Karen walking the floors of a trade show in this fair trade section with all these international vendors. And we got to talking. I don't know how we even started talking. She heard what I was working on. She told me what she was thinking of doing. And what Karen went through is a process that I think so many people do, which is you got to go, just like young people, when young people are figuring out what they want to do in their lives, there is this period at this life stage that hits you when you're going to turn 50, you're going to turn 60, you're thinking, what's next? And Karen did a series of these experiments. She had gone to business school years ago. She went back to her business school and asked them if they had any programs she could get involved in. And she started mentoring some woman via Skype in somewhere in Africa. In Afghanistan first, right. And she was doing mentoring via Skype. Then she came to New York, which is where I met her. She lives out here, take some courses at one of the, FIT, right? Courses in merchandising products. Then she was walking the floors of this trade show to meet people who are doing this kind of work. So we'll get back to Karen later, but there is this whole process that people go through where you try things out, you learn a little more, and it's like sailing where you tack, you go with the wind a little bit in this direction, then you go back, and it's for some people it's going to be like Isabel, where the first thing you kind of get scooped into transports you. But for other people, it's going to be this winding path, and I think it's really important to let yourself have some of those experiences, follow your nose a little bit, and adjust.
There are a lot of people that way. Here, look at out of Encore.org's research, too. Approximately 9 million between the ages of 44 and 70 have made a career change after 40 or come out of retirement to do work that combines personal meaning, continued income, and social purpose. So it is almost a trend.
Yes, in journalistic terms, we would call this a trend. Yes. So we used to joke when I was at the New York Times that if you see three people doing something, you can call it a trend. So,
before you go on, then let's do something. Let's do a poll.
Yeah.
So who in the room is in, what? Let's ask the questions because, you know, a good scientist asks the right questions.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of wondering here who's, let's call it already transitioned. Okay.
Who's in an encore?
Who is in an encore career? Oh, very few.
Okay. Who has tried out a few things already in the way we were just describing, some experiments?
Okay. Who is already in full retirement and looking to maybe do something else? Okay.
And how many people say you know someone in your life who after today you will say is in an encore career? Yay. Okay. Good. All right. Do you have others?
Do I have other questions? Why are you here? You're sitting there and no hands have gone up.
I wasn't just reasonable. I think there may be a lot of folks that are looking either by choice or not by choice to recareer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe haven't reached the retirement age yet, but have reached a point in their life they need to go back to work, or they need to continue working. So underemployed, unemployed, out of the workforce for years. I think that's where the organization I work with, that's a recent
one. But I'm also thinking the other aspect, and that is this all there is? Mm-hmm. I want to do something that has more value. Mm-hmm. And when I made that discovery, the thing that happened to me after I got my diagnosis, I had two questions. The first one was, okay, God, this isn't about dying. What's the point? And the second question was, I wonder if I should do a news story. So I answered the first question pretty quickly and did that within 6 months. But it took me a couple of years into this journey with these women to suddenly say, this was the point, because I was suddenly putting all of these skill sets to work, suddenly using talents and finding new muscles, and I was also doing something of value. And unlike the nadir of my career at 51, where I felt not only was I not doing anything of value, but I didn't feel valued. Don't you? I think that you point that out is a very important
part
of that transition.
What you describe is what I call the encore moment. Okay, so your moment was, well, this is I'm not supposed to die. If this isn't about dying, what's it about? Which I love that's like a classic encore moment. The is there all there is moment is another big motivator. But there are several other ways that people come to an encore moment, and you just hit on one, which is you lose your job. You hit the end of the line, your industry completely changes, and you've hit a point where you're going to have to retrain to do the thing you've done for 20 years or to do something new. So maybe it's time to do something new. And people, we find that even people who have done what we would call social purpose work, who've been teachers, social workers, worked in nonprofits for 20 or 30 years, hit a point where they say, I still want to have an impact, I still want to be relevant, but I want to do it in a new way. Like, I'm tired of solving the same problem, I'm tired of flexing the same muscles. Another big thing is people have a loss in their life or some kind of crisis that makes them say, whatever I do next, I want it to matter. Because people start thinking about legacy at this time of life. You start thinking, there's a concept in developmental psychology called generativity. Eric Erickson wrote about it, which is that we hit a stage of life where we start thinking about what will be left of us, right? Where we start thinking, what can I do with the years ahead? What will my legacy look like? It's why people at a certain age often get very interested in their grandchildren or in being around young people. It's about the future. And so people can do this with an encore career. It's a big draw.
I see John standing there.
Yeah,
but
you want to tell us something.
I wanted to say, for the sake of our listening audience, if we're going to have questions, we should probably pass a mic so that the people listening to the recording can hear the questions. Would you like
sure.
us to proceed like that?
If people are so inclined, I don't have that problem. I love the interaction. Obviously, people out there are here for a very special reason.
Do we have a mic to be passing?
Maybe someone can be holding that.
Take mine.
Okay. And
here's take mine. Great. So if you do want to say something.
Yeah, we can get rid of the index cards and go live for questions if you want to do
whichever
questions
works
periodically.
You. This is about being spontaneous. Here we have right here. But you know, in response to what you were going to say, what I have said to my son is, when you die, you want your book to be interesting. You know, 3 pages and it's done.
My comment is that I feel that I have been in this thing, but not for money.
Yeah.
Avocationally for the last 10 or some years. And my husband just died. And that whole idea of legacy, I've been just talking about that yesterday to someone.
Yeah.
But it's all done free
right.
through my church and volunteer groups.
Right. And so, I mean, I think that's an encore. So, you know, when we were really working on how do we talk about this, even subtitle of the book, which is Make a Living and Make a Difference and Make a Living, we really, and our tagline is purpose, passion, and a paycheck. The reason why we talk about income is that so many people need it. So, and when we talk about this encore idea, it's always income if you need it. If your encore work can be done pro bono or through volunteering, that doesn't take anything away from its value. But there are many, many people who can't afford to do that and want to get compensated for their work. And we also want to open up your eyes to the fact that there is opportunity for work in the nonprofit sector and to turn some of that high-impact volunteering into paying jobs, if that's how people are inclined. So I'm glad you mentioned it, because volunteering is hugely important.
So you mentioned, we talked about trending. So this is actually, I would say, a global social movement, because Encore.org is actually awarded others, entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs.
Who have worked around the world,
who
right?
Or are global.
So we, our work primarily focuses on people in the U.S., but sometimes they're working on issues around the world. So we have one Purpose Prize winner whose story I love to talk. This guy was a laid-off gaffer from the movie business who went on a trip to Africa, and while on this trip discovered women in this village who were shelling peanuts with their hands in this very inefficient way. He came home, he started puttering around in his garage, and he created this mechanical device that would help quickly shell these nuts. He thought he was going to go and find something at Williams-Sonoma and then ship a bunch of them back to Africa. Nothing existed. So this guy was really mechanical. His name is Jock Brandis. He created this nut sheller, which is now mass-produced and sold globally. And he solved a problem that he saw. He found a way to help lift people up out of poverty and move them into a different kind of work. So we do honor people who have done work around the world. And actually, this work and this trend is catching on around the world. And the reason it's catching on is that there is a demographic situation that's happening around the world. It's not just happening here. So the reason the encore trend is happening is really demographics combined with longevity. So we have, if you've ever seen these data points, if we had a PowerPoint, the one we'd show is like what the global aging situation looks like around the world. So we're hitting a point where the number of people over 65 in many developing countries is going to be way greater than the number of people under 30. And we've never really had that kind of imbalance before. So we often hear, in the news business, you hear about the gray tsunami, the silver tsunami, or you hear about the wave of greedy geezers coming down the pike, right? They're depleting Social Security. There's not going to be anything left for our children. Like, that's right, the common narrative. And the reason that this work got started was really the brainchild of Mark Friedman, who's spoken here many times. He's the founder of Encore.org, and he and a few other people got this idea, like, what if we turn that idea on its head and instead of focusing on this aging demographic, this is 75 million baby boomers, 10,000 of whom of turning 65 every day. So instead of looking at this as a problem, what if we looked at this as a legion of problem solvers available to solve the world's biggest social problems, the most educated generation to ever have lived, and lots of people here in the U.S. who can relate to the activist spirit they had in the 1960s? You know, there's this whole, so that's kind of where the idea came from. But what's interesting is since we've been doing this work for the past 10 years, we've gotten inquiries from around the world. In fact, Mark Friedman is speaking in Australia tonight, which is why he's not here, because there's a conference in Australia that was interested in having him speak. We've had inquiries from Germany, from Ireland, from the UK, from Canada. So this is, right now, it's hard to call this a global movement, but really this work is relevant all over the world.
Well, it goes not only to an aging globe, but it also goes to the experience that you have in these millions and millions of people that should not lie fallow, that should not be wasted.
And unfortunately,
we're all trying to be employed within a youth movement,
right,
who doesn't want to be taught by us. And yet, we may end up saving their buns, right?
Right, but that's an interesting, it's so funny that you work for, that you founded an organization serving right. the Latino community, because I think there are cultures that value elders mm-hmm. in a way that America really doesn't. And I do think the other thing that we could be doing here is getting back to this idea of valuing elders and the wisdom that comes from elders. And I think the Latino community certainly has that in a lot of cultures where there's something to learn from that.
Right.
And so there's another piece of it, which is on the age front, which is that this isn't just relevant for baby boomers and for people who are coming into this now. I mean, I encourage all of you to talk about this issue with younger people in your life and to get them interested in seeing the lifespan and the career trajectory in a whole different kind of way, because young people are going to age into this. Like, this isn't just something that's going to affect this generation and then be done. There is a new stage that has opened up between midlife and old age, this extended midlife period that lasts 20 or 30 years, that is this new second wind, right, that you can do something with. And, you know, we now have this very, we have a person on our board who is a scholar in the area of longevity research, Laura Carstensen out of Stanford, and she's written really, really intelligently about this life stage and about some of the ways we have to rethink things like education. So right now, we have this weird life path, right, where we front load all our education at the beginning, right? You learn all this stuff at the beginning of your life, then you go off and you get hitched and maybe you have a family and you work and then suddenly, like, it's all happening right there at the middle, right? It's really clumpy where you have to work and raise your family and do all this. And then your education's getting really stale, right? Because you did it, 15, 20 years ago. And then that's supposed to sustain you for this next 30 or 40 years when really you need education sprinkled out throughout your life. And you need to be working maybe not like with this big lump in the middle, but maybe you need to be working in a little more of a up and down way. You know, so we need to really change the whole life course.
Well, actually, this was predicted by futurists at least 2 decades ago, in which they started telling us, you're going to have 5 jobs in your lifetime. You know, partially because of the aging issue, but partially because of the change in how industry operates, downsizing, upsizing, and so on and so forth. And you have to be nimble.
Right.
And it's really about being nimble as you age, both, you know, in terms of what you're doing, but what you're learning.
Right. And so, you know, educational institutions are starting to pay a lot of attention
right.
to this. So a very, we have an initiative that's just starting to pick up steam, where we're working now with all kinds of higher ed institutions. So the first things we did was we worked with community colleges who wanted to attract the over 50. They were really targeting over 50 people who needed to reinvent as a result of the recession. And we worked with these community colleges on developing some courses that were in encore-oriented fields, like healthcare and gerontology, and green jobs, like training all kinds of people in construction to do green construction. So all of these are high growth, high needs areas that would train people with new skills. And we're now working with 4-year institutions because universities are seeing some value to attracting the Encore population back to school. So they're working with their, I've been speaking on this tour to alumni organizations all over the country who get the idea that, wow, if we can get people to come back to school and retrain for their Encores, they would invest in themselves for some kind of education that's going to carry them for the next 20 or 30 years. And universities are interested in helping communities and helping the world. It's a very consistent message.
Not only that, I think what can be really interesting as a research project down the road, and that is that we're not only talking about the wealth of experience, we're talking about the health of a whole group of people who, as they age, you know, might become ill, but if they age well, will not, you know, not have high-end health costs, but in fact will add to a healthy society as opposed to subtract from a healthy society.
Right. So it's funny that you mentioned that, the healthy aging, yeah. Because I find it interesting because it's relevant on every angle of the Encore idea. So yes, it's all related to positive aging and healthful aging. So having an Encore career, you know, and we should do some research on this, really does have kind of both psychic and kind of health benefits. But the other thing that I have to point out is a whole lot of Encore jobs are in this wellness area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mentioned, you know, healthcare navigators and those kinds of things that are very important to helping people who are going through a health experience, community healthcare workers. There are these new roles that are just cropping up, wellness coaches, all kinds of jobs that are kind of intermediaries between, like non-medical healthcare jobs are a very, very big area for people at the Encore stage because they've often had life experience. They've often been through some health issues themselves. So it's a very fertile area for people who want to do Encore work.
Well, I think, our 94-year-old physicist here is a perfect example of when you're using the mind, you're very active, and I think you stay very healthy, as opposed to this whole concept of, congratulations, you're retiring, and then what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they always talk about that image of people going off into the sunset in the trailer, you know, and lounging someplace on a beach someplace, or you, a camper or whatever. Someone just told me out there, and she's much younger, oh, I want to do that. I said, no, not really. It's not good for your health. You know, and it's not good for your brain. It is not in my DNA to retire.
That said, Isabel, I do want to make one thing clear.
Yes.
Because we're not killjoys here. I mean, there are I interview hundreds of people in doing this book, and I will tell you this. People who want to change the world also have things in their bucket list in addition to changing the world. Often they want to travel. They want to spend time with family members. They want to do some things that they never had time to do. So we do see a whole lot of people who are actually not working 24/7, like Isabel, but who are also, in addition to their Encore work, making time for other things that are really important to them. And we see that even in our own organization. We have some people on our own staff who are making time to, you know, babysit for their grandchild once a week because that's really important. And we try to walk the walk, and we want to support that in our organization. So there is this idea of looking at your whole life and trying to figure out what are all the pieces of your life that you want to have at this Encore stage, and how are you going to craft a life that allows you to have all those pieces of your life. And the two organizations that I know are represented here, Coming of Age and the Transition Network, are organizations that are looking at that whole pie. Like, what does life look like at this stage? And work is one piece of it, as is community and family. And what are the other things you're looking for?
You sound like the women who were saying, how do I balance my life? And I say, get over it. Because the fact of the matter is that your life is what, you know, what it is. And if you can separate it in five equal pieces and all of the things fit fine in your balance, that's great. But I don't know many people who really are, and I think they spend a lot of time trying to convince themselves they're balanced or trying to find the happy balance. So even as we age, I think what keeps us going is that sense of salsa in our lives, right? There's some energy there. There's some passion that really keeps us going.
Well, and also there's multitasking. So, I mean, I've encountered so many people who get passionate about the work they do because they also really like hanging out with the people that they get to work with in this new work. I mean, you know, or, I mean, I've found a way to, you know, the organization, Encore.org, that I work for, we have this habit of, we all do walking and hiking meetings. Like, we make dates with each other sometimes to work on an issue while taking a walk, because there's a bunch of us who really like to do that, who work together. And we're all kind of type A. We're trying to get a lot of things done, and we also want to exercise and be healthy. So I do think you hit a certain age where you realize there's some non-negotiables, and right. you're going to try to set up your life to both and to take care of yourself so that you can affect the change you want to change in the world.
So let's get back to the book then. What are the five questions to ask? What are our five questions that we should ask?
To ourselves?
Yeah. It says, are we ready? Do we need to? Do we want to? Can we? Should we? Whatever.
Yeah.
Those are just the broads. What are your five questions in the Bible?
Yeah. So you're quizzing me on my own book, and I'm probably going to tell you something different that's in the book. So I would say, like, for starters, I think there is this really... The fundamental, like when we put this book together, there was a big question of there's two audiences for the book, right? There's people who know what they want to do and are just figuring out how to get there. And then there's people who have no idea what they want to do, so they got to figure that out. So I think the fundamental question you have to start with is, which camp are you in? Do you already know what you want? If so, you're going to be focusing on how you're going to get there. If you don't know what you want, and it's a very similar process, actually, either way. But if you don't know what you want, what are the kinds of things you could try to figure that out? So there's a whole chapter on exercises you can do. It's like, what color's your parachute for the encore years? So we came up with very, very specific exercises that can help you, things you could do out in the world, things you could do in your head. And it's really important to do some combination of in your head and out in the world kind of things. It's really important to try stuff out, to see if you like it, to do an experiment, to volunteer in your community, to take on a pro bono consulting assignment, to, you know, to get involved in a board or an organization that can help you learn more.
How about interview others?
Yes, definitely. And that's something I want to encourage. If there's, you know, there's going to be a little mingle time together tonight, I'm going to sign books. You might be able to talk to some people who are here. I'd encourage you to get to know people right here in this room, because you have like-minded people who obviously are interested or and at various levels of this process. So this is a perfect place to do some of that mingling.
Now, it always seems that, you know, people are moving from a career in corporate America to a nonprofit to feel one, or as a non-core career, or to feel that they have value or are doing something of value. Is that actually true?
No. That is one way that it's happened, that kind of sector switching move. But there are many other ways that it happens, and one of them is we have an example of another way sitting right here in the front. So Judy Townsend is an example. Her story is told in the book. And Judy represents an interesting and growing movement of starting a for-profit business that has, a positive benefit on society. And Judy started a business that's kind of whimsical. Judy was working on a gardening project and stumbled onto this kind of opportunity to use mannequins that were discarded to decorate this garden she was working on. And she realized that there were... You always talk about this in quantities. What was it, like thousands of pounds? What's the 100,000 pounds of mannequins that were ended up in landfills because they were discarded by the industries that had used them. And Judy started exploring and with her husband started a business called Mannequin Madness that is at the intersection of what we call kind of social purpose and profit generating. And fun. And I want to emphasize fun because you have to follow what speaks to you. And Judy's creative and energetic. And Judy's going to be available to talk to you. Raise your hand, Judy, afterwards, if anybody wants to talk about kind of this growing space of social entrepreneurship where you can start a business that's... And so Judy's business has a positive environmental impact. She has started a business where people rent and buy these mannequins for various projects they're working on. And she's gotten all these awards from environmental organizations because of the work that it's doing. And it's very Bay Area kind of concept. But there are so many people. I mean, and I've seen a lot of businesses... around the serving the aging population. It's a huge area for growing businesses. So there are people who are doing this work in for-profit businesses. There are people getting involved in government. There are people who are getting involved as activists in their communities. There are people who are founding their own nonprofits and leading them like you. And then there are people who are moving from management roles or other jobs in the private sector into similar roles in nonprofits or other socially minded organizations. So there's a pretty wide span of what people are doing. There's not one way to have an impact in the world. There's lots of people also who are having an impact in the corporate world itself. So there are so many companies that are really looking at their own practices around the world. I mean, look what's going on with the factories in Bangladesh right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've talked to countless people in the last 2 months who told me they want to work on safety conditions in factories around the world. I mean, it is just, there's things that happen that wake us up to injustice. And those are the kind, I mean, I've seen people launch Encore careers by reading something in the news that makes them unable to sleep. And they often can tie that to something that's inside of them or a skill they have or a network they're involved in. So that's a big spur for people.
What about, this is a curious question. What happens to people who've spent their whole life doing good?
Yeah.
Are they a part of this also?
Yeah.
Then now they're going to do bad?
Yeah.
Or are they just going to be bad?
So I have to confess, I have talked to many, many people who spend their whole life, you know, in the nonprofit sector who say, wow, can I make money one day? So that does happen. But more often than not, the people I run into like that in this world are people who are often experiencing a certain kind of burnout. I've talked to teachers and social workers and nonprofit managing directors who give me some variation of teachers say, you know, after 30 years, it's time for, I want to mentor the next generation of teachers who are fresh. I've talked to social workers who say, you know what, after being on the ground and working one-on-one with people, I kind of know what's wrong with the system, and I want to solve big problems systemically now. I want to start an organization or work on policy issues or get involved in a much different kind of way. People who want to change the world usually don't stop wanting to change the world, but they do often want to change the way they do it. And one of the biggest ways I see it is they go from on the ground to leadership or kind of policy work or the other way around. Like, I've talked to people who are managing directors of nonprofits who say, like, I'm never going to manage another person again. I'm never going to do another budget. And they become counselors. One of our board members, who was an executive who had ran many nonprofits, retired from her last nonprofit and is now in seminary training to become a pastoral counselor. She's dealt with a lot of addiction in her life, and she wants to work one-on-one with people, never do another budget again, never manage a staff, never answer to a board.
Does anybody here have anything they wanted to jump
yeah,
in?
Yeah, and we could look at some of those cards, too.
This is a good time.
Okay.
Okay, good.
We'd like to remind our listening audience, this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to Marcy Alberher and Isabel Duran. Now, I know there are questions.
Okay.
So if you have a question card, you haven't handed it in, if you just put your hand up.
Go for it.
Let us have it. Or if you have a spontaneous question, we'll pass the mic. I think there is a question.
Sure.
Here.
Okay. What is Encore doing right now? Projects. So I think this is asking, what is Encore.org, the organization, doing? Is that... Right? Okay. So we run a bunch of programs, and I'll just kind of run through them a little bit. But you could learn about everything we do at the website, encore.org. We also have a few staff members here, and we'll all be around the book signing table at the end if you want to come up and meet any of us. So we run a bunch of programs. One is the Encore Fellows Program. So that is a program for people who want to transition from the private sector to the nonprofit sector. And it's an organized fellowship program. It lasts 1 year. Half-time or 6 months full-time, and it pays a generous stipend. And the idea is that we're trying to find people who have really transferable skills in the private sector and want to move to the nonprofit sector but don't know enough about the nonprofit sector and want to try something out, want to get some experience, want to build their network. So that's one program. We do the Purpose Prize, which honors people who are over 60 and who are innovating in some way, and Isabel was honored in the Purpose Prize Awards last year, and we're collecting nominations for people who are over 60 for the Purpose Prize for next year. We're working on this Encore U initiative, which is going to really help secondary higher education organizations kind of tap into this and figure out what role they have to play. We do research. So Isabel cited some of our research, but a lot of our work is behind the scenes. So we're doing media and communications work and research so that this idea starts bubbling out in the world. But really the next phase of our work is trying to figure out how to get people to identify using Encore language and telling their own Encore stories so that this starts to feel much more like a social movement and that there are ways that you can all be a part of this. So if you sign up for our mailing list, you're going to hear a lot more about that coming up. So we would like to engage all of you because this movement is you. It's really not us talking about this, it's what you're out there doing in the world. And every time I speak around the country and people come up and talk afterwards, they tell me about things I've never heard about. They tell me about resources and things in the community and all kinds of things that need to go into the next version of this book. So I'm hoping more of that will happen later tonight.
I was looking at my PowerPoint here, and one of the things I would like us to talk about are setting priorities. And this is what I put in for adding up the consequences of not acting. So there you go. I have a little ad machine, and we're going to add up. After you give the priority setting, we'll add up the consequences of not acting. We discussed it about the health issue. But so you put three must-haves, three like-to-haves, and three you can give up.
Yeah, so what you're talking about is there's a whole chapter in the book about planning and specifically about financial planning. So how do you figure out how to move into this new kind of work? And really one of the questions you're going to ask yourself is, are you going to be moving into work that is lower paying than what you did now? So that exercise is very specifically for people who are trying to think about how might I live on a lower salary than I used to live. And there's this model of retirement planning that all the financial planners will talk to you about. And what I find is interesting about financial planning is the whole basis of financial planning is setting up your life so that you could survive at a time where you don't generate any income for yourself anymore, where you can just live off whatever savings that you have and the income that generates. Well, so few people are going to be in a situation where they can live off their investments. So if you look at the Encore model, you're adding a new dimension, which is how can you invest in yourself so that you could be an income generating asset, right? Not just rely on these other assets. But even doing that, you may have a period of your life where you're not earning any income when you're going back to school, when you're doing some kind of retraining. So it's important to get a sense of what are you willing to give up, what kind of trade-offs you're going to make. And it really goes back to kind of what kind of life do you want to lead at this stage? Do you need to live where you're living? Many people at this life stage are downsizing. They're trading up from the house that they raised their family in and moving into a smaller place. Many people are living very creatively in co-living arrangements. They're moving in with someone in a similar life stage who may not be a family member. As part of this tour, I stayed with one of my book subjects in a co-housing community in Portland, Oregon, where a bunch of people were sharing the resources of the land that they lived on in this really cool communal living experience, which is a whole new different way to think about aging and way more economical and way more sustainable, both for individuals and for the world. So there's a lot of ways to think creatively about this life stage where being smart about what you do doesn't necessarily have to mean depriving yourself.
Right. I don't know how many people have said to me, I wished I could retire, but I can't afford to.
Right, right.
And that really gets people stuck between the rock and the hard place, as we can, who would really like to go out and maybe do some of those lovely things that they dream of doing in terms of helping, and yet at the same time sort of feeling stuck in that job.
Well, it's really interesting. I love having that conversation in a city like San Francisco and in New York, where I live, because you can live somewhere cheaper than here. We're lucky to be having that conversation, living in a city where one of the things you can change is where you live. When I talk to people in Portland, Oregon, it was harder to say that because they moved to Oregon because it was less expensive often than where they came from. So that's a very interesting point to consider in this whole thing.
Yeah, it's true. But I think it also might put you in a place where you're isolated. I mean, you move.
Right.
And yet you might be isolated from everybody and everything that is near and dear.
But one of the things we look at, and I really think I'd like to write a piece of this one day, is, so for years AARP has been doing all these, and all these magazines do stories on retirement-friendly cities, right, the friendliest cities to retire. And, we look at it a little differently, like, what would be the friendliest cities to have an Encore in? So obviously low cost of living is a high priority, but you'd want to live in a place, right, where there's a lot of civic engagement. You'd want to live in a place that's walkable, that has really good access to lifelong learning, that has really good wellness facilities. Well, if you put together a list of where you'd want to spend your Encore years, those are really important things to think about. And there are also things, the things I just described, that aren't going to make you feel isolated, because the communities that would have those ingredients are not going to be places where you're going to be isolated, and they're probably going to be places where you'd find like-minded people. We have a map on our website. If you go to encore.org/local, there is a map with all the Encore-oriented organizations that exist around the country. And I would say, well, there's Encore activity and some local organizations on the ground in many cities around the country. And I would say those are Encore-friendly places. And I think we're going to do a little more work on kind of uncovering that.
I was thinking one of the things, and I wondered if you had some demographic breakdown of the folks who are in these Encore careers, if you've seen very high-level corporate types step down and have to redefine themselves in that role. They're not the leader anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They now have to follow.
Yeah, yeah.
And how they do it successfully, if at all, or they end up turning around and becoming social entrepreneurs,
yeah,
and have to create something else.
Yeah, so you're referring to this concept, the PIP complex, which is the previously important person. So there's a lot of these people running around in this area, too, where someone hits a really, you know, high level in their field, and often this life stage is about thinking about how to reinvent and learn. And yes, they may become founders and social entrepreneurs and kind of rise all over again, but I think there is in order to really kind of make it in a new place, there has to be a certain amount of humility that goes along with that. And I encourage people to think about, and Karen, you and I have talked about this, you know, because you've been so successful in the business world, and you've seen that, right? It's challenging. Do you want to say anything on this? I feel like you've lived this a little.
Mike
for Karen, yeah.
Mike, yes.
Well, Marcy talked a little bit earlier about frustrations and challenges, and maybe I'll just hit on a couple of those challenges that I experienced. One, which everyone would do if you're looking at a different industry, is that I was looking at going from high-tech into fashion, textile, apparel, not understanding the jargon, who the players were, used to working with in organizations that are run by men to organizations that are run by women. So I did spend
different
an
culture.
Awful lot of time doing my due diligence. Wherever there were people in those industries, I went to talk to understand, to listen. And it's still, there's still a lot to understand about it.
And you said listen, which I think is really important.
And a second frustration, which you were just talking about, which is I had my own expectations going into this in terms of salary, in terms of finance, in terms of what I wanted to do, what I didn't want to do. I had worked in a nonprofit the first part of my career and had left for various reasons. Really didn't want to create a whole new nonprofit all over again, wanted more of a business model. And I had to really examine those and look at what were negotiable items and what weren't. And then thirdly, I think just the general frustration of I'm not there yet. You know, I came into this with a hypothesis that I wanted to look at creating an organization that would benefit these women that are individuals, artisans that are creating textiles around the world that are unique and are sort of a dying craft, and how to raise the awareness and how to bring income into these women's lives. And hit one idea of a hypothesis, didn't quite work, tried another hypothesis, wasn't quite right, wasn't a good fit for me, and I'm still exploring those. So I sort of went into it assuming that I was going to come out fairly quickly with an idea and run with it. So I'm still exploring that. So I would say that, and happily exploring it, doing volunteer work with some artisans out of the country and on a couple textile boards, but it's an ongoing process, so...
And what I love about Karen being here is, and I really wanted to achieve this in the book, is this is not a snap your fingers metamorphosis. And I think it's really important that we not paint the picture that these transitions are quick and easy. You're going to get lost. You're going to learn stuff. You're going to wind. But hopefully that takes you somewhere. And Karen took a leave from her job, went back to her job, made some decisions about how much longer, right? You know, so, I mean, that's a process. And if you give yourself a little time, and it's really important not to recognize that you have enough time, that you have enough time for detours and to get lost. I mean, and I talk to people starting this way later in life than Karen, who still gave themselves that kind of runway.
That's a good place to wrap up, and I can tell you that I've been doing my encore career for 13 years now, and there's still a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And I think that's half the joy is in the learning.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, Marcy Elbacher,
for
being here with us. It was great fun to have this conversation.
Thank you so much, Isabel.
Our thanks to you, Marcy. And Isabel for this wonderful conversation. We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 110th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.